Good afternoon and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined today by a good friend of mine, someone who I've had the pleasure of interacting with on the radio several times before, but this is the first time he's appeared on this show, and I'm excited to have him here. Say hello to Justin Hahnemann. He's an author, speaker, singer-songwriter, and a sales and marketing executive with the Coca-Cola Company. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Hey, Todd. It's great to be back.
Well, it's good to see you, my friend.
Yep.
Got a chance to see you a week or so ago at the official book launch for the latest book, which we're actually here to talk about today. But, gosh, before we get into the book, Justin, do take a sec and talk about a little bit about you and your background, some of the work you're doing with Coke.
Yeah, good question. So, first, thanks for having me on your show.
Pleasure.
Been with Coke over 9 years now. And actually started there in the analytics, or what we call business intelligence area. And now I lead new business for retail. So it's a lot of fun. I'm out with a team focused on national retailers, those that don't sell Coke products today. And believe it or not, there still are a few out there. And so that's my day job.
Outstanding. Well, part of what we're going to talk about today on the show about this new book is whenever someone comes up to me and says, you know, there's just not enough hours in the day to do the things that I care about. I always think about one guy, and I think about you. All the stuff that you're doing. Gosh, I do want to get into the book, Justin, but I the audience probably heard me mention singer-songwriter. Talk about that part of your life.
That's a great question. So believe it or not, only 6 or 7 years ago, I started writing and singing music. It was a passion of mine growing up and kind of dropped it. You know, just like all of us, we get into things where, you know, our hobbies or passions when we're younger. We drop those when we go to college and then typically don't pick those back up. For me, I really had a passion for music and wanted to get back into it. Started writing songs, put together an album that led into a second album, 4 or 5 singles. And so over the last 6 or 7 years now, again, released 2 albums in the country space, in the Christian rock space, and just recently started getting into the pop space. So it's an outlet.
You're going to try to cover every genre?
Yeah,
before
well,
done?
I figured, you know, why not?
you haven't just written and published some songs. You've had some success with some of these. Tell us about some of those success stories.
Good question. Our first album was called Saturday in the South and was all about college football, if you want to think of it that way. The title track, Saturday in the South, was actually picked up by CBS Sports and Fox Sports and re-recorded by Tracy Lawrence out of Nashville. And to this day, you will hear it on Saturday 3:30 CBS games. And it's been a lot of fun to watch that product take off from an idea to an actual song to be re-recorded and now leveraged in the way that it was originally envisioned.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congrats on
that. Cool.
A
lot of fun.
I really get a kick out of hearing that song when I do watch that 3:30 game.
High energy.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. All right, well, the new book, this is actually your second book, correct?
So the second book, yeah.
This new book is called Be Extraordinary, Crush Mediocrity and Spark Curiosity. Justin, talk to me about why you had to write this book. I mean, aren't there enough books on the market about how to be extraordinary? Talk about why you had to do this.
So this is my second book. My first book was on personal branding. It's called Make It Happen, Live Out Your Personal Brand. This book is called Be Extraordinary, Crush Mediocrity and Spark Curiosity. The reason behind this was once I finished the first book, I saw first that there was an opportunity to make a real impact on others. And I'd say the first book was my way of figuring it out. And over the last couple of years, I put together quite a few new ideas that I had heard or seen or play out with either at work or outside of work, and felt the need to put together a compilation of those thoughts and ideas, and not just put them in a way that you read normally in a typical leadership book where you'd read hundreds and hundreds of pages and maybe find 4 or 5 key things to take away. What I wanted to do is make it more, I'll say, life application. So there's a big idea or concept to really get your mind around. Quotes from some people in my vast network of friends, family, and colleagues. And then stories or key takeaways so that you can really apply those concepts. So the idea being, you know, more short, big ideas that they're easily applicable to life. And so for me, that was my way of putting all those together in one place. And what better place than a book? And I'd already done it once. So the process was, I'll say, figured out.
Well, I was really honored to be asked to contribute one of those quotes, and I'm when I got my hands on the book, I noticed that it was the very last chapter, and the chapter called Final Thoughts, and so that means one of two things. One, it was the most profound quote that you got, or two, I was the last one to submit, so I'm going to go with the former, but maybe you can clarify. But
I'll clarify. There really, as much as I wanted there to be rhyme or reason, there's a quote on each chapter, just
right.
For those that might be listening, there's 41 chapters. chapters, but that's not as many pages as you might think. Each quote, just I couldn't make them fit to a specific chapter, so I just randomly assigned them, and yours ended up there. Sorry.
No worries.
It's a great way to finish, though.
I'm still going to go with my original theory. I'm going to put you on the spot, Justin, and I'm going to ask you an almost impossible question, but I'm curious about where it might lead the conversation. What is the definition of extraordinary?
So extraordinary leadership was really, the word extraordinary means extraordinary, going above and beyond, raising the bar, pursuing things that most people may not think about. I could go down the list. And in fact, in the book, I actually put in pages with the definition of what extraordinary means. And I won't read through those here. But for me, the big idea behind the title, Be Extraordinary, was to challenge leaders today to find a way to step it up, to find a way to find that inner passion and leverage that to do something more, to challenge those that may not even realize that they have the leadership capacity or ability to think about the things they're really passionate about or really good at, and to invest in those areas and see what it would lead to. And so that was kind of the driver behind the title and behind the content, was challenge existing leaders and then challenging those leaders of tomorrow to really find ways to step up.
And it's wonderful, and it's helpful to provide our perspective on what we think extraordinary is, and to give someone a definition is important because it gives them a frame of reference. And if you ask 10 people their definition, you get 10 different.
Be all different.
And that's okay. I think that's part of the problem, though, Justin, is that most people don't know what that means for them. Is that a fair statement?
It is, and that's actually very applicable. If you read all 41 quotes in the book, the question that I asked each person was, extraordinary leadership is ... And I did not provide any more framework on what the book was about, what was going to be in the book, where their quote was going to be used. And it was interesting to see the different perspectives. And I think that's actually as rich of the content in the book as the ideas that I share. So the quotes were as rich, I believe, as the actual content that I shared.
What does extraordinary look like? I mean, for you, it's a guy who's got the same 24 hours a day that everybody else does, but you've written two books, you publish and perform music, you are an executive with Coca-Cola, care for and tend to a family. Accomplishing those things, is that how you define extraordinary for you? And how does someone know when they're being extraordinary?
So I find it's what fuels me, right? So when I'm leading worship on Sunday with kids, it just fuels me. I get more out of the experience of being there and leading than they probably even recognize. So finding the time in the day to put down notes over the course of weeks and months and making those into a book and meeting with the right people that know how to put books together and then delivering a product that impacts other people, that fuels me, right? When I have an idea for a song, when I put it down on paper and then I go in the studio, when I just make that 30 minutes an hour here and there to get it written down and to see an end product that actually makes someone cry or makes someone get excited, that fuels me. So what I would say is, extraordinary is going to be different for each person, and it may be just spending that quality time with your family. But for me, I enjoy and am fueled by a lot of things, and some of those I just mentioned.
I think it's fair to say, Justin, that a lot of people can't necessarily identify what fuels them.
That's true. I can't
fathom how you can go through this life not knowing those answers. The person who goes home at night and is so needing to escape the mediocrity of their life, and they just try to bury themselves in television and dread getting up the next morning, are aching on Sunday night because it's the beginning of the week. I think it's fair to say they have not identified what fuels them, or they know it and they're too afraid to go after it, right?
And that's very true. I think that the other reason or another driver behind this book was that I do feel like there's some challenges in our society today, and one of which is one that's almost immeasurable, but is one that I see impacting in a negative way a lot of people, and that's the kind of acceptance of mediocrity, or it's okay to be average, or it's okay to make B's and C's in school for kids growing up, or it's okay to allow, and you could go down the list, politics, our school system, sporting venues, companies and their investment in people, or lack of personal relationships. And I'd say in a lot of those places, I could list for you examples of the challenges that are out there. And that then serves as the problem that we're looking to solve. And I'm hoping in investing in my time into putting a book together or ideas and concepts together and speaking to groups about these concepts in hopes of helping to solve those problems and helping to challenge people to not accept mediocrity.
Well, I think a big theme in those conversations, and certainly a theme of this book, is the importance and necessity of change.
Yes.
And I mean, you say you have to pursue big change, and I think that's probably the hang up that stops a lot of people in their tracks, is the fear of change. Talk about that.
Yep. So, and when I think about change, I think about it in a number of different buckets, right? So personal change, so it could be life change, it could be death of a family member, it could be divorce, it could be job change, all of those types of things. And it's not necessarily the change, it's how you respond to it or how you react to it or how you handle it or what are the steps you take once something like that is impacting your life. The second is then, I'll say, within the business environment. And in my world, it could be change within the work environment. So a reorganization, a restructure, a new leader, and whatnot. And typically what comes along with that is momentum, right? So positive or negative momentum. And so it's not necessarily the change that you can control, but you can control how you respond to it or how you leverage it to really be a positive or a negative.
Fear is a big part of that, and fear of the unknown, fear of something new and different, fear of the hard work that's going to take. I mean, fear is a big part of this thing too, right? I mean,
no question.
Fear of whatever it is stops you in your tracks from being extraordinary.
That's true. And so, but the answer to that, I would say, is if you don't ever try, you're not ever going to know. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg. Do you take the risk first and then realize the benefit or what you learn from it, or are you going to wait for other people to pursue things and you're just going to sit back and watch? And for some people, they lack the, I'd say, the drive to go and try new things. They lack the drive to really go out and pursue their passions. And I think that my message to them would be, don't let life go by and regret not ever trying.
Are we ever going to crack that code? I mean, there's
yeah, it's nothing new,
there are
right?
Countless books, there's music, there's art that push that theme of just find that drive and get out there and make something happen. But so many people don't. I mean, is that a lot in life? I mean, obviously someone like you takes the time and the effort to put out a product like this to try to influence people to get over those fears. Maybe if whoever cracks that code is going to probably solve one of the grandest life mysteries of what's holding most of these people back. It's so frustrating to me that we know what to do, Justin.
We
just don't do it.
That's absolutely true. And so you have to, and so it kind of gets to the, how do you measure success of this project, right? So in my mind, if one person's impacted, if an individual takes one big idea or one key concept and does something with it and benefits, then it's a win. And it was worth putting the project together. It was worth coming and talking to you. It's worth going to talk to the group tomorrow. It's, you know what I mean? That, all of those things. And so you have to make sure you define success in a way that you can find a win and generate momentum out of it, versus measuring success based on, you know, X numbers of thousands of books that you hope to sell, or you know, number of different groups you're going to talk to. It's got to be about the impact you're making. So if you think of things that way, it makes it manageable, makes it so that you can bite off pieces and it's worth trying, and you have to develop thick skin around the feedback you get around it.
Well, that's for sure. The tagline includes the phrase spark curiosity. What do you mean by that?
So it's interesting. This one, of the words in the title, that's the part that I struggle with most, but it's the part that I'm really glad that I added. And what I found in the work environment, as well as in the community environments, you know, where I volunteer my time, is, and even with friends and family, is our society pushes us through the school system into, I'll say, rows and columns, right? So into a process or into numbers, and really drives us away from, you know, the creativity that some of us have and fail to leverage. And even in the work environment, with the structures that are put in place around HR processes and procedures, it really limits your ability to be creative, because you have to fit a process or fit within
compliance
a system or structure.
Than
compliance
creativity.
Is more important than creativity. So what I talk about in the book is to not lose your creative curiosity, and how do you get into a role at work or outside of work where you can let that manifest itself. And it could be as simple as, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I lead worship and on Sundays at my church, and I get to be super creative in doing that. It's not that I have to follow a set way of delivering that. I can let my personality come out and let my creativity come out around how to deliver a message. Same at work. If I'm going to pursue a new retailer, I don't have to follow a set structure approach for how to pursue that retailer. I can actually allow some of the creative aspects of our system come out and say, hey, what if we tried this product and this brand and this approach and leverage these people to help in developing the relationship. That's exciting. Now, not everyone has, I'll say, the creative gene, but I do believe that everyone does have some sense of creativity. And for some, it's been pushed away. It's been put off for a long time, so it's kind of not there anymore. But I think there's an opportunity to really let that come out.
Well, I'll talk to someone and say, are you creative? No. Do you solve problems? Well, of course. They're right. Creative.
They have the creative.
That's a creative process. You talked about the organization. I mean, it's one thing, I think, for an individual to see the light, to read a book like this and get inspired and say, all right, I'm going to begin to affect change. I'm going to stop watching reruns at night, and I'm going to write my book, or I'm going to publish a song, and they can begin to do those kinds of things. But when they want to be extraordinary in the corporate environment, which is oftentimes, as we just discussed, not really a conducive environment to that kind of thing. Well, two questions for you, two-part question. One is, what can an individual who says, I want to be extraordinary in my place of work, how do they do that? And two, what can management do to begin to foster an environment where people can strive to be extraordinary?
Great questions. And in the work environment where you do have process and procedure, I'll say, a couple ways that I found that you can really apply the concepts here in the book are one is around coaching and mentoring. So, you know, a passion point of mine is how do you coach and mentor the next generation of leaders? And I talk about methods for engaging with mentors and talking to them about what their future career goals are, where they'd like to go, what skills they need to get there, how can you help them in terms of relationship building or networking and the context they need within the business and in the industry. So within your work environment, coaching and mentoring is certainly an important area, one that many people don't recognize is very important, and one that most people can engage with pretty simply. Anyone could be a coach or a mentor or a person that's a reference for others in the organization. They don't have to go through some sort of vast training and whatnot to be that type of person. So that's one way, and there are different techniques around that. The second is around, I'll say, pioneering. And so you can think of pioneering as starting your own company, as starting your own business, as leaving a large company to start a small company. The reality, though, is there's also a way to bring new ideas in a positive way, in a constructive way, to the table, even within a large organization, that then could create new momentum to drive change. And I do believe that momentum is one of the biggest factors, along with people, in terms of driving positive organizational change.
This notion that the school system was created to foster and embed in us this compliant attitude so that we work well in the factory. And Seth Godin, who writes a lot about that idea,
Seth, in
his new book that just came out, this Icarus Deception, is very much on that theme, as frankly as a lot of his writing. I'm wondering, Justin, if the more that people are talking about that and the more connected we are with, say, social media and those kinds of things, if maybe we're not albeit an early stage of this new path, but I wonder if this is beginning to change a little bit, that people are beginning to demand a little bit more flexibility to be creative at the workplace. Do you see that, or am I off base there?
No, there's no question that I'll say the business environment's changed around people the last, I'd say, a couple of years, not only in the fact that we went through a recession and investments in people and a lot of the leadership development type and classes and training in large corporations went away, but also in the education of, I'll say, the next generation of employees and workers and leaders and what they've grown up with and what they've gone through in school. Many of them have grown up now with an iPhone, with the iPad, now have tablets in school, whereas those in most businesses did not grow up with that. So you're just going to see natural change because of technology and also just, I'll say, the education systems change over time. And then the third area, like I mentioned, was the recession and change in the business environment or what's expected in the business environment. So there's no question we're seeing that change, but it goes back to being flexible and understanding people's skills and looking at what skills you need for a certain role and being open to considering people's backgrounds, which are very different now than what you might have hired back in the early to mid 90s or late 90s. And so that's how I'd say I'd address that.
Got it. All right. So you did say that every chapter is centered around a big idea. Tell me about one or two of your favorites. If you can. I know it's hard.
Yeah, that's tough because I like all 41 of them. Of course, yours being the best.
Oh, of course.
Closing out the book. So I start with a little bit of rehash on personal branding. And so I wrote quite a bit about personal branding in my first book. I think this is an important topic. It's one that I'll say has been worn out somewhat over the last couple of years because it got really hot. A lot of people wrote about it. A lot of people talked about it. And now it's kind of, it's important, but maybe not as big as it was 2 or 3 years ago, especially when I put out my first book. So that's one I'd say is really important. The second one I'd say is, you know, how do you do self-promotion? I wrote a chapter on the art of self-promotion. And this, talk about fear. I mean, this is a topic that for most people is not one that's comfortable. And self-promotion isn't just promoting a book. Self-promotion is, how do you inform your boss, your manager, your leader? How do you make sure they know what you're doing, what successes you're finding, what lessons you're learning? How do they know what impact you're making outside of work as well as in work? The art of self-promotion is one that I'd say is another one that I find very interesting and exciting. And then the third one is encompassed over a couple chapters, and it's around, like I said, momentum. And I talk about momentum from a couple perspectives. One, from a personal perspective, so things can happen in your life that generate new momentum. You can get a new customer, a new client, a new relationship. You can move to a new location. You can have something new in your life, and that generates momentum, right? That's personal momentum. Then there's the organization's momentum. So a new product is launched. For us, it might be a new beverage product that is being launched to the market. That generates momentum not only with shoppers and consumers, but internally. There's excitement, there's energy, there's investment, there's training, there's education, there's all the branding around it that generates momentum. Or you have a new leader, you get a new CEO or a new boss, that can generate momentum. So that would be the three that I'd pick out.
Yep. Yep, I agree. All right, we touched on this, but I want to go back to it, and I want to close on this. You know, my whole mission in life is to help people be intrepid.
Love that.
Your mission with this book is to help people be extraordinary. And Justin, I've come to the conclusion that the difference between people who are intrepid or extraordinary are people who actually do stuff.
That's
get
right.
out there and they take action.
That's
and
right.
they even if they fall on their face and fail, they're doing something. And most people. Or I'm sorry, a majority of people, I don't think, are taking a real action or taking appropriate steps. What is your best piece of advice on giving someone what can they do to start shifting their attitude to one of action and doing versus, as we said earlier, we all know what to do.
Sure.
We know what we're supposed to be doing. We know how to do it, but for whatever reason we're not taking the action. What's your best advice on how to overcome that?
So first of all, I'll talk about it from the book's perspective. So there's 41 chapters, 41 big ideas. There's no way you could do all 41. And this is actually something I had a conversation about with a guy who had read the book last week. And he said, you know, what I did was I took two or three. And I decided that those were going to be the two or three I focused on. And there's in the book, life, you know, it's the application piece. How do I apply this in my own life? So he's taking those two or three and focusing on those. And I think that's what you've got to do is you've got to find the one or two or three things that you know you could potentially change or potentially invest in and just see what the results are. The other thing I'd say is you've got to make some time. And so everyone loves to say how they have no time in a week. And I was just, I just heard a great example this weekend. And if you think of 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week, 168 hours, right, in a given week. And even though you might be working 50 hours, okay, let's just say you're working 10-hour days, 5 days a week. That leaves you 118 hours. And I realize that a lot of people need a lot of sleep. But you could probably find an hour a week, or maybe 2 hours even, of the 168 to try something new or to go meet with somebody different or go invest in your network or spend some time writing down some ideas. That's what I would challenge people to do. And I would just say take a month and do it 2 hours a week for a month. If it doesn't go anywhere, great. At least you gave it a shot. Take 2 months. But unless you put down a goal like that, it's going to be tough to accomplish, and you'll never realize the potential that you might have.
Well, you could decide on Saturday afternoon, I have to listen to Justin's song, I want to watch the ball game. But you're willing to give that 3 hours to that ball game.
Yeah, you can listen to the song and watch the game while you're making notes.
But also do something big, you know, write.
That's right.
To write a song. I mean, time is, yeah, I get it. Time is such a hang-up for a lot of people.
It's Justin, an excuse.
It is an excuse. It really is. Hey, we're out of time, Justin. This was a lot of fun. I'm really grateful for the chance to visit with you. Before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you Where can they get their hands on this book, and where can they find some of your music, too?
No question. All of it's off of my launchpad, which would be Hahnemann.com, www.hahnemann.com. The book and music are all in your standard locations, iTunes, Kindle, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, you know, all of the typical outlets. You know, less and less these days do people go to bookstores, so you've got to make sure your product, whether it's music or book, are in all of those online locations, and it is. So they're all out there.
Outstanding. Well, we will certainly link up to all that in the show notes. Justin Hahnemann, author, speaker, singer, songwriter, and sales and marketing executive with Coca-Cola. Great as always to see
you. Thank
you
so much.
Taking the time.
It was a total blast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right. Well, that wraps this show. On behalf of my guest, Justin Hahnemann, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Intrepid Radio. We'll be right back.